Hello everyone and welcome to episode 27 of the Filthy Lip Out Golf Podcast with me, Kit Alexander. John E. Morgan is here with me as ever.
Who are?
And our guest this week is none other than former European Tour player, former Team GB Olympics team leader, current pundit on Sky Sports, Jamie Spence. Jamie, thanks for coming on. How's 2021 treating you so far?
It's absolute shit, isn't it?
It's not got off to the best start. I'm hoping that through this podcast and making some looking ahead a bit to the year in golf, we can offer some form of escapism.
Through it, I don't play golf in the winter anyway. But I was thinking of getting my clubs out. Johnny and I were thinking of playing Sunningdale foursomes as well together. But I don't know whether that's going to go ahead. So I feel really sorry for everybody who rely on their golf for their exercise and their fun and companionship. And in all seriousness, it sucks really. And I don't see. You don't have to go on about it, but I can. I can be the Grinch. Yeah. I don't see why you can't play golf. You can social distance, and we still got to live a life. I mean, it's tough for everybody this mentally, and you need a bit of escape. And if I didn't have my dog, I don't know what I'd do. I've got to be honest.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
100% agree. John, you were saying you played a fair bit of golf just over that winter period, and you know, it's just you and your parents at home, and it kind of gave you a bit of escapism, something to do.
Yeah, I mean, it was nice to get out with my friends. Needed to clear the air. I mean, you won't know this, Tony, Jamie, but I lost my dog on Boxing Day. I had to put him down, unfortunately.
Oh, sorry, mate.
But it was. I went out and played on Boxing Day after I took him to the vet, and it was a good. I needed it. I needed to get out there, bit of fresh air, for many other reasons as well. If I'd have came home, like you said, Jamie, you know, it's a case of, you know, you got to, you know, sort your brain out. You know, your brain needs a bit of help, you know. So getting out on the golf course was definitely therapeutic and something I needed anyway. But what was it? I just find it really frustrating that we can't get out there now. I mean, I was down to play a nice round of golf again on Saturday. I feel very privileged to be a golfer, by the way, because obviously we get that kind of luxury of being able to go and play some sport that we love, even though it's cold and, you know, it's not easy to play golf in, but still, it's nice to stretch the legs and have a chat at distance.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we can all agree that we prefer to be playing golf out there, but hopefully everyone at home and everyone listening stays as happy as they can and healthy and we can do this as quick as possible. I feel like I've been saying that for a while now. Moving on to more positive things. Jamie, you had an incredible career on the European Tour. I think I was looking about 1987 to 2007. You were pretty.
He's an old bugger, mine, isn't he?
I don't want to date you too much, but I was born in 1986, just chucking it out there. But an incredible career, and you've gone on to do a lot after the game as well. Looking back, how do you assess everything that you have achieved in the game, and what stands out for you as the highlights?
There's a lot of questions there. The time goes by quickly. So anybody who's playing golf on the tour, you need to enjoy yourself, or any sport really, you need to enjoy it while you're in there, because it doesn't last forever. I never thought I'd be able to play the tour, to be honest with you. I just love playing golf. So I ended up getting better and better locally, playing pro-ams and stuff like that. And then I got my card at the tour school. I was useless, to be honest with you. When I got my card in 86 and I played 87, I was hopeless, honestly. I was hitting bunkers. If I got a bunker shot to 30 feet, I thought that was a good shot. And I was playing with guys who were taking the pins out and trying to hole it. So I had parts of my game that were good, but you soon realise that, you know, you need to learn and get better. Whereas I think the players that come out these days are more accomplished, you know, that they've got a lot of the game already there, especially physically. So it has changed massively. I love most of it. I don't have many regrets, to be honest with you. I should have done better. I was a good player. It was a time there where I could play. If I put my mind to it, I could play. But it's that dedication. I listened to your podcast with Chris Wood this morning. I thought I'd better get a feel of you two numpties before I come on here.
And that was a full three-way West Country, that. We were talking about before we started recording. That was full-on West Country.
No, fortunately, I had the subtitle version so I could listen to it. But it was interesting listening to Chris. You know, his two kids have come along and now he wants to be at home. You want to be at home with your kids and your family, and things change for you as a person through your life. So, and that dedication required to be a Nick Faldo, because he was probably the most dedicated player I knew. It takes a lot of sacrifice, and to give that up, which I wasn't prepared to do. I love other things in life. I love going to see the Arsenal and being at home. And I love other things in life. So it's a difficult balance. So I empathise with Chris on that one.
Yeah, definitely.
How much, you alluded to it there, but obviously you said when you came on tour, you were struggling to hit bunker shots of sort of 30 feet and you took time to grow. And I think talking to some of the older pros that we have on this, it was very different. You didn't come on tour ready to win. You came on tour and then you had to earn your stripes and play your way up. Whereas now, like you say, people just come on ready to go. People are better, younger. Do you think that can make it tough for someone like yourself, or perhaps the Ian Poulter story from not so long ago, where he wasn't the real deal. He wasn't a wunderkind from the age of 12, everyone expecting him to come on. Those guys that flourish later, is it more difficult for that to happen these days?
Probably, because they're all overcoached. They rely on their coach or their psychologist or their trainer to tell them what to do, whereas we had to make it up ourselves, which I think gives you a far stronger basis in your game. I play a lot of golf like John this summer, and I've played some really good stuff this summer. I'm probably a better player now mentally because I can cope with it than I was when I was a raging psycho when I was on the tour. I was lucky that I had a lot of good role models. I mean, Paul Way was from my club, Ryder Cup player, PGA winner. And Paul was probably the best amateur in the world at that point. He was unbelievable. And I was lucky. I'm saying same age as Paul. We're about a week apart in terms of age. And that was great for me. And then we had a tour pro called Keith Ashdown at my club. I used to go round and round with Keith. We used to gamble all the time and chip and putt and all sorts of things. So, and then when I got out on tour, you were able to copy Tony Johnston in a bunker example, or Gordon Brown Jr., my best mate, God bless him. And you watch Seve, and I remember getting in Seve's footsteps and thinking, oh, blimey, that's how you do it. So we were very lucky in that respect that people would help each other. And and if you weren't very good at something, you asked. Mm-hmm. The most difficult thing, actually, back in the day was driving the golf ball. That was the most difficult thing. And now it's the easiest thing. They all hit the ball an absolute mile. And I think that's a lot down to the equipment and the golf ball, to be honest with you. But driving the ball was a real art back in the day.
It was. Definitely was.
You mentioned some incredible names there. What were the best tips that you ever got given? The Seve bunker one there, getting into the footsteps. Are there any others that stand out for you?
Oh, blimey, too many, really, because you all talked and, Gordy Jr. was my best mate and great player, Gordy. Very underrated and understated fella. But we would talk all the time and, I learned a lot from him mentally, because you never knew with Gordy whether he shot 77 or 67. And his work ethic was so strong. He'd never stop working. And being around people like that gives you a good grounding. And I would come in having shot a really good score, quite excited. And within a couple of minutes of being in George Gordy's company, you got knocked down again. So that's great. You need that. And he was a true mate. But being around playing with Wuzzy and playing with Langer, on, when you play with them in the last couple of rounds, you just learn that they don't panic. And also I learned, playing with Darren Clark and Monty and these guys, if they've got, let's say it's a 240 carry and they only carry it 242, they go for it. Yeah. They went for it.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, they went for it. And you thought, I would have laid up that, I would have laid up. And you just sort of think, crikey, they back themselves. Right, if I want to win, that's what I've got to do. So that was the big learning curve for me. When you play with these guys and you watch them, you think, actually, they're not that much better than me. But in certain, but the margins, the fine margins can be 10 miles, as opposed to a few inches. So you learn by, we were very lucky, Johnny, myself and Johnny, we played with some of the great, great players of any generation, really. So that was a privilege.
Yeah, John, did you get that same experience when you were on tour in sort of the early and mid 2000s?
Yeah, well, I had the pleasure. I went to Doral and all of a sudden playing the first two rounds with Langer and on there and Fulton Allen and, two totally different kind of characters. But awesome to watch and also learn, and then I went to, Hawaii, Sony Open, seeing Ernie Els on the range and stuff like that, all of a sudden rubbing shoulders with the Goose and all that. And you're going, wow, crikey, look at this. For the first time playing with Vijay, gets to number one in the world in 2004. Amazing. You learn so much stuff. Like you say, you're just picking their brains and they're happy to give it. They're happy to give it. They really are. You go around there. If you've got a load of questions you want to ask, ask him. As soon as I seen Tiger for the first time, I asked him a question, you know, straight away about his putting. You know, can he help me out? Yeah, he helped me out. Went straight to the putting green and gave me 10 minutes of his time. Absolutely mustard. I mean, you can't buy that, can you? I mean, that's just what you want.
And Johnny, you still can't putt.
you're my nemesis, Jamie. You're my nemesis because every time we've gone away somewhere to work, we might have a little flutter, you know, on an hour here or an hour there when we've got off, and then we'll have a little putting comp or chipping comp, and you always bleeding beat me.
I've got you.
But when we went out for a little quick nine holes, we had some time, didn't we, over in Belgium? Yeah. We went out and I pulled your pants down then, mate. I pulled your pants down then.
Only once, mate.
Yeah. Yeah, but that was the whole game, apart from just one little thing. It was the whole game. You know,
yes. So I've got.
Do you remember
to get it in his head? It's what? How can I beat him psychologically? Because I feel like John always has the edge on me.
Oh, mate, it's easy. It's easy. It's easy to get into his head. We had a thing. I tell you what we did for Sky once. We did an online thing with Henny Zoll, and it was a darts thing. It was this big darts board, and you
don't give me any of that.
You got to chip the balls onto the darts board. He cleared off to the loo, so I had a sneaky little practice which he doesn't know about. And I found a club that hit the bullseye. It just went up a perfect height for the bullseye. So when he came back, we had three balls each. Anyway, I scored in three balls, 125. And Johnny's got about 24. It was unbelievable. It was brilliant. And he just couldn't believe how I did it. But of course, I cheated. You just got to cheat. You got a cheat kit.
I'll bear that in mind and definitely apply that to Johnny next month.
I knew he'd done that. I knew it. Never at the. Oh,
do you remember? Do you remember when we chipped into the back of the buggy? Where was that? In Austria.
Yes.
They had a chipping competition. You said, "I've done really well here, Spencey. I've done four in a minute." And I did I did 5 in 30 seconds and just chucked the club down.
I was going to say, did you just drop and walk off?
Absolutely. Just dropped the club and walked.
Just giving John the eyes the whole way.
He did the mic drop. Thank you very much. And walked away. Thank you very much.
We have a great laugh. Yeah. We do have a great laugh.
That we do. That we definitely do. But, mate, the new year's coming, though, Spencey. 2021, buddy. I mean, finally, we got 2020 out of the way. It's been a topsy-turvy time. But 2021, it's a jam-packed, you know, rota that is looking very nice, I must say, for players and for ourselves as well, getting out there to work. But, you know, what do you expect in 2021? What do you see? Who's the big surprise?
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? You got to look. I looked at. I know you sent me a few things on the email there about what to look for. The majors are always difficult to pick out when it's out of this time. Yeah, I can't see anyone getting past DJ again at Augusta the way he played there. I mean, he's a phenomenal player, isn't he? He's got a lot. The last few years, he's worked on his pitching, his short game, and that's really paid dividends because he's now. Whenever he holds those 4 or 5 footers, John, that you know is the most difficult. He just knocks them all in, doesn't he? They just all go in the middle of the hole. So that nemesis that was there for him isn't there anymore. So I expect him to dominate the world of golf again in 2021. In regards to players coming through, this is a fella you'll have walked around with. Wilco Nienaber. You've been around him?
Mate, unbelievable. I mean, I was in Joburg at the South African Open and I measured that drive. That's 429 yards. You know, drive that he hit, and then he hit a sand iron on the green to that par five. You know, it was like, you know, I just couldn't believe it. And effortless power. I think he just, what I found with Wilco Nienaber, and it comes down to a lot of really, really good players, is wedge play. Mm. Wedge play. And, you know, that was, to me, was his only little soft weakness. He had it now and again, and he was awesome. But when he went for a little soft one or tried to be too delicate with a wedge shot, he seemed to have a little bit of a pull on it. You know what I mean? Everything seemed to go to the left, like just drop it and come across it and it goes straight left a little bit. And seemed like that was his weakness to me a little bit. But then that's a lot of players' weakness. You know, look at Dustin Johnson. It used to be his weakness. Now it's one of his strengths. Wedge play now, he can control the spin. It's absolutely beautiful. And he's Daniel Dart. He really is. You know, and there's other golfers we could, you know, bring up, you know, if their wedge play was better. You know, I think that's one of his things he's going to have a look at as well when he goes for the easy shot, Wilco Nienaber. But he is bloody good. He is bloody good.
429 yards.
429 yards, mate. I mean, it was slightly downhill, And I would
I should hope so.
Slightly down, I mean, on a runway.
Well, it was slightly downhill, and I would say it was probably no more than a 5-yard breeze behind him. Nothing really to write home about. And okay, we were 10 above sea level, so it was going 10 yards further on the carry, you know, clubs were. And so, you know, he had that going for him, obviously, but still 429 yards. I mean, I couldn't give him the extra yard. It was just what it was, you know, 429. But yeah, he ripped on a sand iron into the middle of the green then for his second shot. It was like bloody ridiculous, absolutely ridiculous. But he is exceptional. I love his mentality, cracking mentality. On the way round, he did a couple of shockers, really took it well. Yeah, I think he's a man on the up. And then Jaden Schaper, the other young lad from South Africa, very impressive in beautiful golf swing. Two totally different guys. You got Jaden Schaper, 5 foot, whatever he is, and bloody, you know, Wilker Nienaber, 6 foot, whatever he is, you know, totally different in contrast, but beautiful swings, all of them, got plenty of game. I expect a good run from the South Africans with them two young lads coming through.
It helps they've got early events on the Challenge Tour as well. It's yet to be seen whether Nienaber gets one of these sort of three special performance exemptions on the European Tour, obviously with the categories being held over from last season. But you would think he'd probably get the number one of those, let alone it being a top three for anyone that's shown special skill or ability this year that deserves a card that wouldn't have one already. So you think he'll get one of them. But
people want to see him, Kit. People want to see him, Kit. He's unbelievable to watch.
And I think there's going to be a certain amount of not just talent taken into account on that. It's going to be the marketability of these players and whether they're going to get headlines. And Nienaber undoubtedly will. I think he'll be there. But you've got the three Challenge Tour events in February as well, which someone like Schaper, for instance, might well decide to go and play in, and then that gets his season off to a really fast start.
When exactly.
European Tour schedule. You've got the events in the Middle East, but you need to be pretty high up the rankings to get in them, I think, when it comes down to it. There's going to be so much competition. Are these lesser guys going to get the starts early in the year? It's an interesting one because I was looking at who's going to break through this year. And normally you've got all the players stepping up from the Challenge Tour here in Europe, from the Korn Ferry Tour over in the States, any names that have sprung up through Q School. And we haven't had that. So it's almost like the top 250, top 300 are pretty established. And they'll almost be the same guys getting the same opportunities next year. But one guy who jumped out for me, and it's perhaps he might get more opportunities because he's playing in a different part of the world, and that's Takumi Kanaya, the young Japanese guy, was world amateur number one, turned pro back end of the summer. He's already played really well in Japan. He won on the Japan Tour as an amateur. I think he's 147 in the world ranking, something like that now. So he's made a very solid start in a handful of goes in pro events. I think he'll kick on with lots of golf in Asia this year and might even be a sneaky little look for the Olympics when we get to that point with it being held in Japan. If he can do enough to force his way up the world rankings and into that team for Japan. Obviously, Matsuyama is going to be the main man there, but there'll be one other spot for a Japanese player. If he can have a very fast start to the year, could be a decent outside bet for that. But I think Kanaya will get into the top 50 in the world this year, one way or another.
Well, good shout, Kit, I must say. But I say that the Olympics will be a huge thing for him if he can get into that team. I played the course Kasumigaseki a few years ago. I went there on a recce when I was still team leader for the Olympics, which I'm not anymore, thank God. And it's a great track, real long, proper golf course. It's going to be steaming hot as well. And it's going to be, I think it'll be a big advantage to the Japanese players that time of year.
Yeah, I was going
if it gets played.
Well, this is it. We still don't know at this stage. And fingers crossed the Olympics does go ahead, because a wonderful sporting event in general, and especially with golf involved now. But not many people know a lot about that golf course. Who's it going to suit?
Well, I took on the club touring pro there, young lad. He was half Argentinian and half Japanese. Ooh. And I played him for, I can't remember what we played for, but I had to deposit about $150 out of my wallet at the end of the round. Because this kid, there's two par fives of 600 yards and he got it on both of them. Right. So he was pretty impressive. And I obviously realised I was a complete mug in taking this lad on around his own track, having just got out of the plane. But it's just a normal resort. It's not a resort course. It's a country club, but it's long. It's pretty straightforward. But the heat's going to be a big factor. But you've got to hit it. You're going to have to hit it around there. I just came away thinking, blimey, that was a long way around there. Yeah. And you've got to play. So it's a long way from Tokyo, though. It's a good hour and a half sitting in a car. So logistically, it's going to be difficult for the players. If I was advising anybody, I'd want to stay, if possible, near the course.
Yeah. Just while we're on the Olympics, obviously you were heavily involved at Rio, a wonderful gold medal for Justin Rose. You were GB team leader. What was that experience like?
I'll never, ever forget it. It was amazing, but I didn't want to do it again. It was a voluntary role and it was a lot of work. It was a lot of work, a lot of aggro, a lot of administration, which isn't my favourite, as you can imagine. And it was like Justin bought into it straight away, and he spent a lot of his own money in preparation, and he rented a house near the course and brought in a chef, and he did it properly, so he deserved everything he's got through that. And I think we're seeing the power of the Olympics, because being the Olympic champion for 4 or 5 years now for Justin, it's an incredible accolade to have every time you go onto the team. I think that's going to get bigger and bigger, especially for the ladies game as well. So I'm all in favour. I know a lot of people say, oh, you shouldn't have golf in the Olympics, you shouldn't have football, you shouldn't have this, you shouldn't have that. Well, golf was in the Olympics originally, back in 1904. So it was in there to start with. And, I'm delighted it is in there. And it gives these players an incredible opportunity. I'll give you one thing. When I left my house, I had the Team GB kit on with all the bags. I mean, I felt a complete knob. I really did. You know, when I think of the great Olympians in the past and I'm standing there in the sort of same kit, I'm thinking, oh, I feel such a fraud here. But anyway, off I went with my tracksuit on. And but the amazing thing, when I got there, I got to the village, and the people from the BOA do an incredible job, especially Mike Hay. I mean, without them, I'd have been stuffed. But I went up to the lift and I went into the wrong room. And in the room was Andy Murray. So the first person I met was Andy Murray. The tennis team were opposite us. I said, hello, Andy. Never met him before in my life. And then in the morning, I go down the lift and I'm in the lift with Chris Froome in his bike.
Yeah.
And then the next day, I'm going up in the lift with Joe Joyce, the boxer. Johnny will know.
Yeah.
And it was surreal, to be honest with you. But I just immersed myself in the golf, and It was a great experience. And I'm, obviously with Justin winning the gold, and Danny did well as well. Danny Willett did well. And Charlie Hull and Katrina Matthew, they threw themselves into it as well. So it was a great experience, but I don't want to do it again.
Fair enough. Tick that box, mate. You tick that box. It's all done.
What an experience. Just those people there that you got to mingle with around the village, or wander into their rooms, or.
Kit, I'm a competitor and I want to win, you see. So all that stuff doesn't really interest me, to be honest with you. I was more interested in doing a good job for the guys and girls. And, I thought, I'm not going to do this. And I'm so pleased that we got a medal. I mean, the fact that it was a gold for Justin with the work he put in was, and he had my old caddy on his bag, Mark Fulcher, Fooch. So it was great. Yeah. That was something I'll never forget.
Oh yeah. You've been a part of history there, and you've helped contribute to that. And
well, I hope so. I'll tell you what, the is something for everybody. The catering there is 24 hours, right? And I took my laser down with me, because this tent was 85 yards in depth and 310 yards length. Wow. That's how long, that's how big it was, this structure. A tent. And they serve food. They serve food all day for all of the athletes. Everybody on site went in and ate in that tent. About 20,000 people.
Bloody indoor driving range,
mate. It was unbelievable. I'll never forget it. I mean, it was just an incredible thing to witness. Just everybody going in there.
It'll be this year with social distancing.
I know. You just, well, exactly. You can't do it, can you? You're just not going to be able to do it.
Administrative thing as well. It was one thing that popped out, Jamie. Obviously, you were in the European Tour Tournament Committee chairman.
Yeah, yeah.
And I always find those roles absolutely fascinating when the players, sort of the senior players, step into those roles. What do you do in that position, or if you're on that committee or leading it?
Well, you got the European Tour is a members' organisation, so it is for the members. So theoretically, the tournament committee run the tour. Really, but Keith Pelly comes to the committee, and we have a board of directors as well, which I went on, which make the bigger decisions, can you say? But any golfing decision comes through the tournament committee and comes through the players. It has to be approved through the players. I mean, ultimately, you back your leader and your staff, and they've got some great staff in the European Tour. But you do have to, you know, you do have a difference of opinion sometimes. And the last thing you want to do is have a vote on anything. You want to try and come to an agreement. So it's a very important part of the of European Tour, actually. And although it takes a lot of your time, because everyone comes up to you on the range or wherever you are, and they've got a point of view about. One player came up to me once in Dubai, says, "Spencey, there's no creche here this week. I've got the wife and the kid. There's nowhere for them to go. Blah, 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 blah." I was like, "Yeah, all right." I won't say who it was. I say, "Yeah, all right, Dave. Yeah, we'll look into that." So, all right, Dave. So then 3 years later, the same player comes up to me. He says, "Spencey, I can't believe there's too many kids in the players' lounge. I can't concentrate. I can't relax." So that's what you're up against. That's what you're up against. Same player wants kids. 3 years later, when he wants to get away from his kids, he doesn't want kids. And simple little things like that, which are, it's bullshit, isn't it, really? But but you have to, you're the sounding board for people to come to you with their gripes. And in the end, I couldn't cope with that anymore.
Well, mate, talk about European Tour. You've had some cracking wins on there, but there's one I want you to talk us through. One of the wonders of the world, I think, where we get to play, and the view itself, Crans Montana. Your name is there, printed on the nice side street, you know, with all the manner of amazing golfers as well. Just tell us through that last round and what happened, because for people that are listening to this podcast and didn't know you won it, tell them what you shot that last day and, you know, what went down.
Well, firstly, they have a plaque in the town for every winner. It's on the floor. It's a nice brass plaque. And my Sky commentators throw stuff on it all the time we're up there. So it's always covered in mud and crap. That's the first thing to say. Secondly, regarding 92, I shot 60 in the last round to win. Shot 12 under par, round of my life. Never forget it. I had a bad finish on the Saturday night. It was snowing, and I took six down the last and went 10 behind Montgomery. And I nearly had a fight with a marshal who laughed at me as I was kicking my putter or something. We had words, which are, you know, obviously not great. I had a bottle and a half of red wine that night. Came down to the course in the morning, not shaven, old clothes on, not feeling great, I have to be honest with you. And I shot the best round of my life. Shot 60. Man. So who needs preparation, Johnny?
Preparation each.
Preparation. Preparation. A bottle and a half of red wine. It's the right kind.
True. But the thing is, I knew I was playing really, I was right on my game, and it put me on edge that week, actually, because I knew it was a course I could do well at. And I shot six under around the front nine, and I got to the 10th and went, "Do you know what? I've got a chance here." And the leaders hadn't been out. And that's what I was most proud of, is gathering myself, because 10, 11, 12, 13 aren't that easy. Then you got, back then, you had a really easy finish. And I got to 14, and I said to Colin Byrne, who caddied for Ernie Els and a few others in, after me, and I said, if we go birdie, eagle, birdie, you know, blah, 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 we can win this. But I didn't, it was sort of jokingly, but at the same time, I knew it was on, and I did it. I went birdie, eagle, birdie, birdie, birdie. And then Montgomery had gone out, and he bogeyed the first one of the first two holes. So suddenly I was five in front. Yeah. I finished, and they only just started. So it was a bizarre day, but it just all happened at once to me, because I was playing really well at the time. You know, you have, Johnny knows, when your game's there, but sometimes that you force it and try and push it, and being really relaxed and not really caring about much that morning, it sort of all happened to me at the time. But I was really pleased that I gathered myself the back nine and realised the opportunity was there, and I took it.
And how special was it to get your first European Tour win? Obviously, it's what you strive for the moment you turn pro. And you've achieved that, and in such incredible circumstances.
Yeah, it was big. Yeah, obviously, that's, you know, your career's a progression. So to win your first event, to win the European Masters, and it was also first qualifying event for the Ryder Cup, which I wanted to get in, which I never did. But I probably put too much emphasis on it, Kit, actually. Way too much. I pushed myself way too hard around that time, and I should have got the Ryder Cup team. I didn't. I actually got shingles the following year in 93 because I just wore myself. I just drove myself on too much and wore myself out, to be honest with you, because I wanted it so badly.
So,
it was, it was great to win. To, you feel like you belong, you know, when you're sitting down with other guys who, who've won out there on tour, you feel like you belong, you know? So, it was nice.
Brilliant, mate. What do you feel, I know it's always difficult, but you said you put too much pressure on yourself perhaps earlier in the week, or you felt on edge because you knew your game was so good. Did you take anything from the fact that actually I've just shot 60 on the back of not really caring after the finish on Saturday, drinking the red wine, maybe not going through the warm-up quite as on it?
Well, I tell you what, I practiced in the net in the pro shop. I hit about 5 shots in the net. They had a net in the pro shop because the range is about a 10-minute drive away. So I thought, I'm not doing that. I can't be arsed with that. I'll just hit a few in the net.
Do you then go next week? Well, maybe there's something in this. Maybe I'm getting in my own
way.
Or can you
I did
step off it?
Yeah, well, I was very intense, and I got fined a lot as well when I was on tour, by the way. I was probably the most fined player. I was a nutter, to be honest with you. I started working with a guy in hypnotherapy, a guy called Fred Trex, who's no longer with us, and that was brilliant for me, and brilliant for him, because it just made me calm, just playing a more calmer. I can't play calm. I have to have a bit of fire.
Yeah,
I have to lose it a bit, but it just made me, as Johnny said about Nienaber, you know, when you play a bad shot, you can't carry it forward. Monty was brilliant at it. He would moan at the photographers and the cameraman, but I tell you what, the next shot, he's on it again, which I never did. I would carry it forward for, I don't know, for the week, really. So I learned just to let it go a bit, and it really improved me as a player. Still does, actually. So yeah, you learn as you go along. I like to see a bit of fire. Johnny knows what. Johnny's as mad as I am.
Yeah, that's true. You've got to have it, mate. I mean, I had it in abundance, especially growing up, you know, playing county golf, team golf, coming into the pro ranks. Just, you know, you can't help but express yourself. I mean, people used to look at me like I was a complete fruit bat, like, meaning I remember playing with Andrew Sherborne at when I won at the Charles Church, which got me my European tour card. I won the main one on the Challenge Tour. And he kind of looked at me in disgust in a way, like, you know, what are you like? You know, you're losing the plot here. But he was so emotional, you know what I mean? I was so emotional. Like, you know, I knew I was right on the cusp of achieving a goal, like we were talking about, you know, finally getting, you know, breaking through onto the bigger scene. And yeah, he's like shaking my hand going, you need to calm down now and I'll piss off. I'm fine. Don't worry about it. I'm fine.
We want to see that emotion as fans, don't we? We want people to care and to show their character, because everyone's got their own character and their own personality. We just want to be able to see that more as fans, I think.
The only thing is, I was always aware of, is not getting in the way of the guys I was playing with.
Yeah.
If I'm losing it a bit, or, you know, getting a bit ratty or kicking a few clubs, I just thought, keep out of the way, because...
Exactly.
You know, there was a great story. I can't remember it. I think it was Jared Moseley and David Lynn, Johnny. You know the story. It was in France. And Jared Moseley loses the plot, and he goes over to the side of the green and batters the hell out of the golf bag. And Linny's just standing by watching him do it. And he says to him, have you finished? He says, yeah, what's it got to do with you? He said, well, that's my golf bag.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah, I know.
Linny's that type of person to just stay there and wait. Right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's who it was. It was two tailor-made golf bags, and Moseley was bashing the hell out of the wrong one.
Time to move on to a few more predictions for 2021. Now, we've had a little chat about breakthrough stars, and we have mentioned the Masters as well. But let's look at all of the majors. I mean, DJ looks, he's going to be the favourite for the Masters. It's really hard not to back him, I think, at this stage. There's been nothing since he's won it to say he's not going to be the favourite again, and he was so dominant. John, are there any other names apart from DJ that spring out for you at Augusta for April?
I think it's John Rahm. I know he's just signed a new deal with Callaway, so he's all full tilt now, and there's a change of equipment, but guy's so talented, isn't he? He's so talented. He's world number two. We can't get away from that. And, you know, I followed him a lot of times. We were talking about a guy with a passion and an attitude. He's one of them as well. You know, if he gives you the stare, his eyes look like they're going to just bury themselves into you. I've followed him around a few times, and I think he's probably overheard me trying to say a yardage or two on his backswing. And he's like, giving me the eyes. I'm like, oh, dear me. But I really do rate the man. I really do. Some player really is a quality player, and you can't help but think he's going to win a major sooner rather than later. So that's the reason I'm putting him up there. I know it's an easy pick, really, because he's world number two, but you know, he hasn't done it yet, and I think he's about to break the duck.
Yeah, I really like John Rahm, but that equipment change, as you say, from Techmade, excuse me, to Callaway. Jamie, how much can that affect a player? We've seen some guys do it blissfully, as if you'd never noticed, and for others, changing equipment has really stuttered their career somewhat. Do you think John Rahm's the type of guy where we won't even really notice with that transition?
I don't know. We've got to see what happens, haven't we? So I wouldn't want to predict he can win anything until he can actually... You can hit as many balls you like on the range in TrackMan and all the rest of it, but you go out there under the cosh and you've got to control your wedge game to the yard, to the foot, or your 7-iron. It's a distance control that counts, not the length off the tee and things like that.
Exactly.
So until he can control his distance on the golf course under the cosh, that'll be... It's not just the clubs, it's the ball as well. So... Yeah, I'm surprised about that. I like Rory's take on this. He's got so much money, Rory. It'd take him a year to count it. Just play with what you want.
Yeah.
Play with what you want. I mean, your career's not that long. So I would say, you know, Callaway make great stuff. I use Callaway irons and whatever, and the driver. I love it. But I don't use all of it because, obviously they pay me nothing. But... I just think I'd like the latitude to be able to use a few clubs of my own if I was John Rahm. But listen, we'll see what happens, won't we?
Yeah. Very intriguing. I mean, I quite like Justin Thomas for the Masters as well, sneakily. I mean, we've
they can't all win it.
Three guys in the world there, which doesn't sound very imaginative, but I guess as it's coming up. But he's trended. He's played there five times and he's finished better every year with the added experience. We all talk about how important experience is there. And he was fourth in November. So, I mean, DJ and Rahm for me as well, but I think JT. PGA Championship coming up this year is at Kiawah Island, 1991 Ryder Cup venue, of course. Guys, what do we know about Kiawah Island, Jamie? Have you been out there?
Not been there. I know Rory won there in 2012, won by 8.
That's why I'm going Rory.
Yeah, and there were 7 Europeans in the top 10 that week.
Yeah.
So, and who was runner-up? Who knows that?
David Lim.
Very good, Kit. Very good, David Lim.
Oh,
yeah. No appearances in this podcast for David Lim. Great week.
So, Linny was runner-up. He was a good player, Linny, until he decided to pack it and become a property magnet. I like Rory there as well. But DeChambeau, in one of them, I would think maybe that'll be the one, but I don't know. So I've penciled in Rory as well, but I've no idea. I've got to be honest.
Yeah, DeChambeau.
This year is a flighter's golf course, Kira Island. So I think you really got to fluctuate with your ball flight and be absolutely nailed on. I don't think you can just be a one trick pony. So I take Bryson out of that one. I don't give him in the run in for that.
No,
one.
That's a good point.
Yeah, it can get windy there. I mean, I've kind of penciled Brooks Koepka for a bit of a comeback year, if you like. After the injuries, he was irresistible before that. It feels like Kiawah Island might be a track that would suit him quite well. I think the golf world would be better for him back contending again, especially with Bryson up there. I like rivalries from a fan's point of view, to see a little bit of needle, not everyone waiting to shake each other's hand on the 18th. I want it to get...
You want to fight? I want to fight. Yeah, you want to fight. I want to fight. Yeah.
I feel like Brooks would have a fight with someone. So that's why...
Yeah, you want a happy Gilmore, you know, rolling down the bank, trying to beat the crap out of each other. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
I'd like to see that.
The Shambo Koepka, but it's not golf. It's just a fight.
Rather than a playoff, they just go and have a scrap.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd pay for that. I'd pay for that.
Yeah.
I would actually buy that.
They've been pussyfooting around it for ages. Comparing,
I know. Get it on. Come on, get it on.
Come on, lad.
You could be the ref. You could be the ref, Spencey.
Wouldn't need refing, would it? It wouldn't last long.
No, it wouldn't. Who do you think's got the edge if they were fisticuffs between?
I think Koepka would have him. Yeah, Koepka's guys. Yeah, but You never. Bryson might get a jab in quick, and you don't know. But I've got a fancy Kepka.
I'd have to agree. To be honest, I'd have to agree. So you boys are going for Rory at Kiwa Island. I'm going to chuck Brooks Koepka in there as my PGA tip. Really interesting with the US Open this year being at Torrey Pines, because we've actually got a normal PGA Tour event there in January and every year. So we've got that to go on. Obviously, Tiger's incredible record, a 7-time winner at Torrey Pines. Perhaps that'll be his best chance to add to his 15 majors this year. Jamie, what do you think about that one?
No, I can't. I don't know. He looks like he's struggling, doesn't it? I've written him off before, by the way, so don't take what I say. I just think his body's just starting to give, unfortunately, starting to give. Great to see him playing with his lad Charlie the other day.
Yeah.
I mean, they look like they're having a blast. That was brilliant.
Yeah.
So, you're right, though. If he's ever going to win one, it's got to be around Torrey Pines, isn't it? But I'm doubtful. I think we might have seen Tiger, the end of Tiger. I hope not, but he's hardly played any golf. He's obviously struggling.
Yeah. Who do you think might do well there?
Schauffele, Xander Schauffele. He's a US Open winner in the waiting, I think. He's 10th, 5th and 17th in the majors this year. He's played really well in the US Open before. Hits it a decent distance. Gritty, putts well. Yeah, I like Schauffele.
I absolutely agree Xander Schauffele is a US Open winner in waiting. However, I don't think it will be at Torrey Pines. I checked out his record in the Farmers Insurance there. He's had 4 missed cuts and a tied 5th.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know that. I didn't do my research on that bit.
It may be that, I mean, that 2 or 3 of those first missed cuts came obviously a period of time ago when he wasn't the Xander Schauffele we know now, who's in the top 10 in the world and a major champion in waiting. However, it just feels like it might not suit his eye based on that.
No, you might. Yeah, well, it's a good point that. And I only did as my limited research kit, so that's good. I'd like to see Fleetwood or Fitzpatrick do well. They're obviously US Open type players. They love it, both of them. So I really hope that one of them gets into the mix come Sunday, Fleetwood and Fitzpatrick, because they'll have a chance the way they play.
100%.
Well, I played Torrey Pines. I played that event, and I got to say, I think it suits one person who hasn't won a major yet, and that is Lee Westwood. You know, great driver of the ball. You got to be around there. It's as tight as you like. The rough is super thick. You got to be a greens and regulation magnet. He seems to have sorted out his foot, and he's with the old claw grip at the moment. I give him a chance for it. I really do. I really do.
It's going to be
Could have won there last time, Johnny, when Tiger won. He missed out by the playoff by a shot, didn't he, to him and Rocco Media.
Exactly. So, honestly, I give him a full tilt. He's working hard on his fitness. Love what he's doing. Massive fan of Lee. I've always been a massive fan of Lee. And yeah, he's coming into that with a big spring in his step anyway for the new year, isn't he? So, who knows? Who knows?
I'd love to see that, Lee Westwood.
Yeah, I'd love it. I'd love it. I'd love it.
Final major this year is going to be the Open Championship at Royal St. George's, the one that should have been in 2020, but as we know, was cancelled and postponed. That's an interesting one. John, I'm going to go to you first. Open Championship at Royal St. George's. Tell us a bit about the course and who you think.
You know, I was on the PGA Tour when Ben Curtis won it. He's obviously not going to win it this time, I don't think. But not Ben Curtis.
Ben Curtis did win it.
Yeah, Ben Curtis. Sorry, I meant Ben Curtis. What am I on about? I'm, you know, second guess myself. But what was it? Then he obviously had Darren Clarke, and who was right pushing him near the end? Dustin Johnson. You know, and I do see Dustin having a fair old tear up around that golf course. And I think he's got a point to prove around that golf course. He let one go, you know, he hit it OB, didn't he, on the par 5. And but then if I had to go for someone more local, I'm going to go completely out of left field after his massive celebration in South Africa when he got his spot. I'm going for the bullet. I'm going way outfield, man. He loves the Links golf course.
Marcus,
I just see I see a surprise. I see a nice surprise round St. George's. I do. I see surprises because St. George's ain't like a normal kind of Links golf course. Very, very different. Very, very different. And if you get the right time of the day, you get the right tee times in your favour, you are mustard. But if he gets the right tee time, I'd love to see the bullet do well. I know he's making a few changes. I'm not too happy with that because I think he's a natural ability in himself. But yeah, I'm going to go out of left field, going for the bullet.
Nice. Bugger it. Jamie, who do you fancy?
Well, he's right, Johnny. You do get some surprise winners. Bill Rogers won in 81 and Curtis in 03. So something could happen like that. I don't know about the bullet. That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, mate, it could be anyone, couldn't it? I'm just saying.
Imagine the speech if he won. So that'd be worth it. I played the Open there in 93. I played the Open there in 93. Played with Tom Watson in the first two rounds, which was something else, to be honest with you. I made the cut. He didn't. He played great and I was awful. And he just putted terrible. I wanted to give him a putting lesson. But I thought the fact that he's got five claret jugs sitting at home and I haven't, I thought I'd better not. I like DJ as well. I mean, John's right. Yeah. You know, he was bang in there, you know, when Darren won down in 2011. So I think DJ will have a great chance around there. But or John Rahm. John Rahm's proven on Lynx Golf. But this equipment change, I'd see how he gets on. Yeah. Next few months for invest in that, but I think Rahm or DJ, but there's probably going to be somebody out of the pack. I mean, Darren's was a massive surprise when he won, so it could be your Lee Westwood moment. You don't know.
It could be.
I tell you what, it's a tough course. Par 70, 7-2, blows. Bring your waterproofs. you need to hit it well around there. It's tough course.
Oh, it is. I had Sergio caddied against me there. What was it? Jose Manuel Lara took me on in the British Amateur, and Sergio was a little wee grasshopper, about 13, 14 years old, carrying his bag on the way round. And Jose Manuel Lara's going, this boy's going to be special. I'm like, who are you? He said, Sergio Garcia. I went, nice to meet you, mate. And then all of a sudden, bang, there he is. Like, yeah, Sergio Garcia, everybody.
So, I've heard Sergio learn everything he knows about how to play Lynx Golf from watching you on that day, John.
No, I lost 3-2. He definitely wasn't looking at me. Yeah.
I'm going to go for a home English winner, I think, and I've got two names. And the first one I'm going to chuck out there is Tyrrell Hatton, because I did this exact thing, making predictions, 12 months ago on the Sky Sports Golf podcast. And when the Open was meant to be at St. George's in 2020, I said Tyrrell Hatton. Since then, his case has only got stronger. He's won the Arnold Palmer. He's got himself into the top 10 in the world, established himself competing and winning in absolute elite fields, has a great Lynx record, has won the Dunhill twice up in Scotland. I think Tyrrell Hatton's going to be in a really nice place going in there. And the other one is Tommy Fleetwood, a guy we'd all love to see win, I think, an Open Championship in England. He came so close in Portrush, what feels like forever ago now, but played brilliantly. Just ran into an absolute buzzsaw in Shane Lowry that week. I think Hatton and Fleetwood for a home winner, it would be great to see. And they're two guys that will really fancy their chances. That right, Ryder Cup. I mean, it's the big event we look forward to every year. Absolutely gutted it wasn't played in 2020. But I think in hindsight, we've seen absolutely the right call. But the teams are shaping up really interestingly, as much as they have been able to shape up and based on form. My take on it is that for Europe, it could be a real changing of the guard team this year. We've seen the Americans have to go through that process where they've had a lot of rookies playing for a couple of Ryder Cups, massive upheaval. And I think Europe could have exactly the same. We've got guys like Rose and Stenson and Poulter, Francesco Molinari at the moment, not in the top 12 players in the world rankings, not with a lot of points on the board from the events that did count towards it. Last year, they need really big years. What are you expecting to see, Jamie? Are we going to see a lot of rookies? Are there going to be some big names missing out? Or do you expect those guys to come good over the next 6 or 8 months and get themselves in the team as they have been for the last few years?
Yeah, if you play well enough, you'll get in the team now, because it's 1.5 points between now and the PGA. And then, not the PGA, the British Masters. Then it's double points in the British Masters through to the PGA. So there's plenty of opportunity for the guys to get in. But you're right. There's a lot of big names, not in the European side. And when I look at the American side, the six qualifiers at the moment are DJ, DeChambeau, Justin Thomas, Koepka, Morikawa and Schauffele. That's a strong six. Now, the next six I've had a look at, Webb Simpson, Reed, Finau, Matt Wolf, Daniel Berger and Patrick Cantlay. Now, that is a strong team. And I think Steve Stricker would love that side. But that misses Fowler, Mickelson, Bubba, Spieth, Tiger. I don't think Tiger's going to make it. So Americans got America look like they've got a very strong side. Whereas I agree with you, when I look at our 12, you know, you've got Victor Hovland, who's obviously a good player. Wiesberger looks like he's going to make the team. Perez, Victor Perez is in there. I'm hoping Shane Lowry makes the team as well. Can you consider him a rookie? He probably will. He's a rookie, but so yeah, it's different, isn't it? Because Serge, at the moment, Sergio's not in it. Poulter's not in it. Stenson's not in it. Rose isn't. He's just about in it. It's going to be a different team for Padraig Harrington on a very difficult golf course at Whistling Straits. So it's intriguing.
A difficult course, Whistling Straits, but one that might actually play into the European hands in terms of the style of it, John. Do you think that we could... Normally, home field advantage is massive. Medina, really, is the only time in the last five or six that the away team has won, and it took a miracle there. Do you think Whistling Straits is about as good a European-style course, in inverted commas, as we could hope for?
Yeah, I like Whistling Straits for us to go there. I mean, I think match play in general, anyway, suits us down to the ground. We come alive. We're more of a unit, I think, you know, when we come together. We play as one. I think Harrington will get the best out of him. I mean, Jamie works majority of... How many Ryder Cups have you done in the past, Jamie? Are you doing this one again?
No, I'm not. No, I've bailed out. I did five behind the scenes, yeah, working for the captain behind the scenes, the last five. So, yeah, my time's done with that as well. So, that was a great experience as well. But you get these cycles of teams coming good and big players maybe dropping out. But I always think the rookies play well in Ryder Cups.
You
can name a number of rookies who've played some great matches in Ryder Cup. So it's more about the man more than the fact that the experience, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I was a big fan of Thomas Peters before he got his chance, and then he showed how good he was. And I expect him to come really good this year. I do, Thomas Peters. Just as you know, coming off the beaten track now, I see him a bit between his teeth. He's had a kid. He's had a bit of time to really absorb that, and now he's going to come out all systems firing. I think, anyway, I mean, he's a hell of a talent, as you well know, and we've seen many times, haven't we, Jamie? But, you know, for someone like that, like you say, the rookie's doing well. Yeah, they get a bit between their teeth, man. You know, they get the crowd, they get the vibe. You know, the talks that I go, you know, how many... Well, come on in. You can say this. I mean, you've been there for the last five, not this one, but how many great team talks have you heard or overheard, you know, prior to them going out into the final round or, you know, or prior?
Oh, every time, John, every time. I'm fortunate enough to be in a number of team talks. 2010, we had Seve on the phone talking to the team. And unfortunately, he died like that, you know, later on. So that was very emotional. And what more do you need than that before you go out and play?
Well,
there's certain players, and all the captains have been terrific. And Ollie speaks so well; he just gets everybody in tears.
Does, yeah.
When Westwood speak, people listen, and he's always come straight to that. He always makes you think, yeah, you're absolutely right. He always says the right thing. But you've still got to go. The thing is with this, I walked out to that first tee a number of times, and I thought, crikey, you've got to have some personality and you've got to be on your game to cope with that. To have thousands of Americans shouting abuse at you, hoping you hit it in the crap. You've got to have a certain mentality to cope with that. And I'm sure Harrington only gets three picks, Stricker gets six. There's a big thing this time around. Americans have changed because of the COVID crisis and Harrington's only getting three. So it's going to be interesting who he picks because Martin Keimer's been playing some good golf. He's won the PGA round the Whistling Straits.
Yeah.
Will he be looking for experience or will he be looking for Robert McIntyre or Sammy Valimaki, a player like that? It's difficult for Harrington, I think. Much easier for Stricker, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, didn't he have when you were at Glen Eagles and they had Alex Ferguson come in for a chat, mate?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, that was.
And what were you like being a Wenger fan as well?
I know. Well, I must admit, when McGinley told me to go and get Sir Alex, I was like, "You've got to be joking!" But I've got to say, he was brilliant. He was a gentleman, and it was a great experience. He was absolutely incredible what you know, the hour he spent with the team and the caddy. He spent, I tell you what I first did, I took him to the Wise and then I took him to the caddies. He had a quarter of an hour with the caddies giving him a chat. And they were all Leeds fans and Liverpool fans. And they gave him so much abuse. And he took it. He loved it. He loved it. And when we went out, he had his son with him. He said, well, that's good. They only called me a twat five times. So he loved it. And he was brilliant. I mean, it was a great call from McGinley. But they all do things like that. You know, they've all had amazing people come into the locker room to speak to the players. So it's a privilege to be involved. But ultimately, you got to play golf.
And the last one I was going to say as well was Ollie, Miracle at Medina with the clock with Rory racing to the tee. What was going on with you? Because you were there picking up the pieces like Edmund's chicken.
Well, had he not made it, it'd probably been my fault, wouldn't it? To be honest with you. But we called his room, we knocked on his room. It was only until we called his manager, because when Rory won at Kiwa Island, the PGA, he didn't get to the course until half an hour before his tea time. Yeah. His caddy JP doesn't like getting there too early. So you don't want to mess with players as well. No. You don't want to be fussing around them. So you let them get. I spoke to JP about an hour and 10 minutes, said, look, Rory's not here. He said, look, Spencer, don't worry about it. He doesn't like getting here early. I said, are you worried? He said, no. I said, right. But in the meantime, we're calling, obviously, because we don't know where he is. It was only until his manager called Rory's phone that he picked it up and was like, and he was on a different time zone. He was watching TV thinking it was an hour later.
Oh, truth.
So then that's when he got in the cop car and raced to the course. And I had to tell Ollie about 20 minutes before he's teeing off. I said, look, it was half an hour. I said, look, Rory's not here yet. I said, but he will be here. Just, I hope. So Ollie couldn't believe it. I mean, Ollie was just, because Ollie's preparation is just so meticulous with everything that he does. So but if it's going to happen to anybody, Rory coped with it brilliantly. Didn't he birdie the first? He chipped in at the first. Oh, didn't he?
Ripped it, mate. And then he gave him a clock the size of the moon afterwards as well, didn't they? Which was absolutely classic. But mate, it was brilliant. You got so many good stories, Jamie. So many good stories.
Yeah, I could tell you, honestly, there's plenty. But what goes on in Vegas stays in Vegas, John. You've got to respect the players.
Yeah, totally, man. Totally, totally, totally.
From a team perspective, obviously, we've mentioned the strength of how the American team is looking. They're always so strong on paper. Their top 12 players currently in the world rankings are inside the top 20 in the world. But that's kind of the case every year. On paper, they go in stronger than us. And yet Europe has that fantastic record. Having been there behind the scenes, what is it that enables Europe to punch somewhat above its weight in these team competitions?
They're good mates. Most of the Europeans are good mates. They're led very well. We've had some excellent captains and some excellent vice captains who want to be there and put their... I think we put the right pairings out on the golf course. Whereas, I couldn't believe in France, Furyk. If you're going to play Mickelson and Bubba Watson, they're playing one game each day. You don't put them in the foursomes. No. You put them in the four ball. I mean, you and I can do that. Yeah. I can do that. And I know they had trouble behind the scenes there, because I don't know what was going on, but they put in their team sheet very, very late. I was responsible for handing in the team sheets. And I know the American team came in late. So I don't think they really knew what they were doing there that week. I've got to be honest with you. And when you saw some of the pairings, especially in the foursomes, and you think, well, why would you play Mickelson in a foursome round there where we've narrowed the fairways? And that fairways have been narrowed specifically. Yeah. They know that. They've been around. Furyk's been looking at it. It's not as if it's a secret. You tell them everything. Yeah. So there were some very strange decisions gone on. And I know, for example, in Medina, playing Tiger Woods at number of, do you play 11 or 12 in the singles? That was a huge mistake.
12, I think, wasn't it?
Davis Love in Medina in 2012. To put Tiger out last, he was either 12 or 11.
He was 12 against Francesco, wasn't he?
Well, that tells you a story, doesn't it? Why was Tiger playing 12? He doesn't want to be in the thick of it. But if I'm his captain, I want him up front. Get out there and get the crowd going. The crowd want to see Woods. And I don't care what our players say. None of them would want to play Tiger. Yeah, none of them. Yeah, with the crowd baying them. So they've made some bad errors, I think, America as well in their... I think we're far more of a team Europe than the Americans. But they're trying to address that, aren't they, over there?
Top man, Jamie. Legend, mate.
One final prediction. You're there in your Green Bay Packers hoodie. Yeah. Green Bay Packers. mug as well. You're a massive NFL fan. I am too. I know John likes it. We're heading into the playoffs. Aaron Rodgers is his favourite for the MVP. He's had a great season. Your top seeds. Are they going to do it this year? Are the Packers going to the Super Bowl and winning it?
We've got a great chance. We've got to come through Lambeau Field, which is north of Wisconsin. It's minus 20, whatever it is. Who wants to play in that? The only people who want to play in that are the Packers. Yeah. My only reservation, and I love the NFL. Thank goodness the NFL's on, because otherwise I don't know what I'd do at the moment. I mean, I love watching the football, but it's not quite the same at the moment. But the NFL's great. My only reservation, we got hammered by the Tampa Bay Buccaneers early in the season with Tom Brady. And it looks like they're going to beat Washington. It looks like we're going to be up against Tampa. That worries me that they stuffed us. They were all over Rodgers that game. So I don't want them coming through Lambeau, but anybody else will stuff them. But then you've got to play the Chiefs or the Bills in the Super Bowl, and we wouldn't be favourites for that. But they give me a lot of pleasure over the years. I love the NFL. It's brutal. It's quick. It's explosive. I just love watching it every Sunday. And the guys on Sky with the NFL coverage, and about you, Kip, I think it's
they're brilliant.
Sensational.
Neil Reynolds and the guys in the studio are brilliant to watch. I love it.
Neil Reynolds, what does he not know about? It's incredible. His knowledge is better than anybody. So, yeah, I love watching it. It's been a great distraction in these times. And go, Pat, go.
We'll revisit this in a few weeks, potentially.
Do you know that Wisconsin is virtually the same size as the UK and it's got 5.6 million people? That's all. That's how big a state it is. Yeah. So, it's just a touch smaller than the UK. But no one lives there.
Apart from the cheese.
Lots of cheese. Great cheese. Great cheese.
Brilliant. Jamie, thank you so
much. Thanks, Jamie.
Thanks for having me. Cheers.
Thank you, everyone, as always, for listening. A great start to 2021 there with Jamie. Hope you enjoyed the insights. I certainly did. Some predictions. We'll be revisiting them throughout the year to see how right or very, very wrong we turn out to be. Please remember you can follow us on Twitter at @FilthyLipOut. Thank you everyone for listening. Have a great new year and we will see you again next time.
Woohoo!